Informal Observations 3, The Floor. And now, your hosts, Michael Sonbert and Antonio Vance.
All right, everybody, welcome, welcome, welcome to a brand new episode of Informal Observations. Informal Observations Season 3, the first episode of Season 3. We've been on quite a long hiatus. I'm Michael Sonbert, founder and CEO of Skyrocket Education, here as always with the good doctor, Dr. Antonio Vance. Dr. Vance, how are you doing, man?
I'm amazing. I miss our audience. I miss this time. I miss this conversation, all of it. I'm good. Glad to be back.
Well, let me talk to the audience about a couple of things. So we have a new book coming out. It'll come out not long after this episode gets released. It's called Unshakable Leadership, 21 Strategies for, what's the heck the subtitle? For success, for driving success in urban schools and beyond. We wrote it because we really wanted to create a resource for the people who we've spent decades at this point working with, folks in our nation's cities, folks who are oftentimes under-supported, under-resourced. They're in their third, fifth grade teacher of the year. Their assistant principal's teaching full-time. The gym teacher is also the nurse. And all the stuff that goes on in schools like that. We then, as we started to write it, we realized that really the book is for any leader who's willing to just upset the apple cart. Any leader who's willing to say, no, like, okay is not okay. And this is no judgment, but if you're a leader who's like, hey, yeah, maybe my instruction could be better in my school, but guess what? All my kids are going to graduate. And every parent shows up driving a Lexus or a Mercedes or BMW, and I'm just here. I'm gonna work here another 8 years. I'm gonna get my pension and ride off into the sunset. The book's probably not for you, but it is for the person who's like, regardless of whether you work in a rural environment, we've even talked about, we have partners overseas who they're the opposite of in urban environments, who are like, yeah, like our teaching needs to be better, our culture needs to be better. So we're going to talk to you at the end of the episode a little bit more about unshakable leadership.
But I think you said it all already.
I talked too much about the book on the front end. Our publisher will be happy. The book's coming out through ASCD, which most folks will know that name. For us, this is a pretty big deal in terms of just like the size of this publishing house. We're speaking at their conference in Orlando in a couple of weeks, and we're actually doing a book signing down there. So lots of really cool stuff. But let's get to the heart of the matter. We are here with Season 3 of Informal Observations. We are calling it Informal Observations Season 3, The Floor. And the reason for the name The Floor is when we were thinking about like what really differentiates us in this space, it is the fact that we are on the floor in schools pretty much everywhere. We see what's happening on a day-to-day, hour-by-hour, minute-by-minute basis. This is no offense to other folks, but if somebody was an assistant principal in a Salt Lake City suburb for 15 years, they're just not going to have the same perspective that we have. And we also know lots of people who have started really highly successful schools, and I won't mention any names, but you all will know what I'm talking about. But what we found is that those folks have the perspective oftentimes of their school and only their school, even if the schools are in challenging environments. And so we really wanted to talk to you all from a place of like, what do we see happening every day from the floor, not hiding in an office, not at a university and in a cushy office over there, actually what's happening in schools. So format will be a little bit different. In the past, we've done guests, unless somebody amazing comes along, which they will probably, but this will mostly be me and the good doctor. We are going to kick off every episode with me bringing up a potentially divisive education topic, and I'm going to ask Dr. Vance to choose one side to argue for either for or against this thing, which means that sometimes we will be arguing because I'll then take the opposite side. Sometimes we will be arguing a side that we don't really believe in, but it'll be fun, we think, to make the case for you all. And then we'll talk about one topic per episode. And we're going with a little bit more of a more serious tone this time. Feel free to join us and have a gin or have a wine or have a beer. We may as well, but not for this one, because I still have quite a bit of work to do, and I know you do as well. But that's it. That's the format. And our episodes are going to be shorter than they've been in the past. We've had some episodes in the past that have been well over an hour. We're going to do like 30 minutes or so and get you out of here. So for those folks, we know a lot of you listen to us while you're out for a run or out for a walk, and we said let's get an episode beginning, middle and an end before your run is over. So Dr. Vance, let's start with our very first topic
All right, let's
from
roll.
IO3, the floor. Pick a side, sir. State testing. Pick a side. You are either arguing for it or you are arguing against it. And I, of course, will take whatever side you do not take.
That's a tough one. I have to pick a side.
That's right.
All right. I am going to argue because it's the easiest. I'm going to argue against it.
Okay, sure.
That's pretty easy, right? So I'll start with against. So state testing, I think it causes instructional narrowing, I think. So this idea
Definitely.
of like folks will tend to just focus in on, most state tests are just ELA and math. So social studies and science sometimes fall to the wayside and you don't get enough focus on other topics. It's a snapshot. It doesn't really give a full understanding of the student, their growth. It only looks at them in isolation. It doesn't take into account all the other things that really embody the students that we know as teachers and leaders. The lagging feedback, right? You find out in
Completely.
August how kids were performing for that past year. You don't really get it. Teachers usually don't get enough time to be responsive to it. And then I think like the cultural and the linguistic sort of bias, the folks that write these tests are typically not really in touch with all of their students. And I think historically disadvantaged students that speak another language besides English are often disadvantaged in taking these tests, and they don't really often take those into account. So I would argue at this point against state testing. Get rid of it.
Got it. All right. Well, I'm going to have trouble beating your argument because I think everything you said was right on. One part that really stood out to me in your argument was just doesn't really account for the student who has made extraordinary gains in terms of, let's say, attendance or behavior, who's working incredibly hard, but for whom, they have content gaps or they're still
You're supposed
pretty
to be
far
arguing
behind.
for it.
I just it stood out to me as a very smart argument. Here's I'll argue for it. And as I said at the top, sometimes we'll be arguing for or against the thing that we maybe feel more strongly in the other direction. I don't believe there's nearly enough accountability in education today. Too often schools are evaluating teachers formally once a year once every 2 years, in some cases once every 3 years, which I just actually met some schools that do that. If students are failing, sure, teachers may get fired, but in systems where they are tenured and systems where there are really strong unions, it's really hard to get a really poorly performing teacher out of a building. And so the state tests let us know, although imperfect, where we stand. They let us know, again, they don't take into account everything. And so it's not, as I said, it's imperfect, but they let us know where we stand. It gives us something to strive for. If done well, and you and I have both worked in schools where when this stuff is done well, students actually really get behind it and they get excited to show what they know, and they get excited to perform at a really high level. So I want some sort of metric aside from, hey, everybody's happy here, or we have a good school, to let us know how we're actually doing. And state tests allow for that. As a colleague of ours, we have a very big Skyrocket announcement coming in the next 2 weeks. It may come before this is released, but we have a new member joining the team, and that person says, we need to make little bars into big bars. And I think that that's a good way to think about that.
Not buying your argument, but
well, listen, man, there are gonna be times when we're both arguing against or for or against things that we don't necessarily believe. But as I told you, every episode will be a surprise for Dr. Vance, and I'll ask him to choose a side. I hope he doesn't always choose the easier side to
argue. That was definitely the easier one.
Let's talk about today's topic. It's something that's top of mind for educators and just people in general.
Yeah.
Antonio, what do you see the implications of artificial intelligence being in schools, man? Is this a good thing? Is it a bad thing? Is it both? What's on your mind?
Yeah, it's interesting that this was the topic only because the other day I was reading in the Wall Street Journal this article that it just caught my eye because it was about education. And basically the professors, the staff at UC Berkeley are asking for leadership to overturn their no SAT requirement, because students are not able to do middle school math. And one of the professors argued that it is like they have been so reliant on AI, and the loss in criticality and critical thinking is starting to show. And she actually gave the example that in one of their intro engineering classes, and this was on the news, and she said, quote, a student interrupted to ask why, you know, 1/2 + 1/3 equals 5/6. And you have a class full of, you know, folks that are going to be engineers. And she said that she feels that there's been this huge loss in folks being able to critically think. And then there's this.
They're attributing it to
artificial intelligence. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And that folks are just using that to do like math, and they're not actually able to do the actual skills. And so even middle schools where I've worked in, folks are allowing students to use tools to solve problems. And I get it. There's the difference between just like routine math, anything that you could do with a calculator, but it's the loss of understanding conceptual mathematics and conceptual science, when I can just now type into AI anything I want and not necessarily have to understand the concept behind it. And so I think, and then there's another article that I'll talk about when we get a little bit further into the conversation, from the CEO of AMD, the big computer chip maker, who is also starting to like push back. I mean, they're computer chip makers, right? They are big on AI, and they're just talking about that their workforce and how they would like to see folks not actually know anything about AI. But in fact, I think her language was she wants people to know. I'm reading from the article
Great.
that she wants folks to know about purpose, judgment, and problem solving. She doesn't care about artificial intelligence or tools because obviously AI can't do those things, the purpose and judgment, and have those things. So, I mean, I think I'm getting worried. I think the country now and the world are starting to get worried when you, I think, in this recent graduation season, almost every graduation speech mentioned AI
Yeah, I
and
saw that.
all of
Yeah.
these things where people are booing because one, it's going to be harder to find a job. If you're a current college graduate, some of these jobs are even getting replaced by artificial intelligence. So I think there's this, I mean, I don't know what the, healthy use of AI looks like, and how do you stop folks from abusing it and getting dumber, really is something that I think a lot of folks are starting to focus in on.
Yeah, great. You
That
make
was a
great
lot.
points. I think no, it was super helpful, and I know folks are. I imagine some folks are yelling at their whether if you're watching this on YouTube or if you're listening in the car, you're probably yelling at us because you have lots of thoughts on this. Robert Pondicio, who wrote a great book called How the Other Half Learns. He embedded himself at Success Academies in New York for a year. He wrote a great book about how they actually operated. Success is considered one of the best schools, not only in the state of New York, but in the country. And I'll paraphrase his idea, but essentially he argues that AI is exceptional for bolstering and adding to somebody who already has a certain amount of expertise and helping them create something that used to take 5 hours and do it in a few minutes. So, you're coaching a school leader, you have a whole bunch of different ideas, you know exactly what you want to focus on with them, you have the data to reinforce it, and then you ask Claude or ChatGPT, hey, turn all these ideas into a cohesive plan. And Pondicio would argue, and I would agree, that that's a really good use of it because doing that yourself would take forever, but or a while. But you already have the expertise. You're asking AI in that situation to make the process shorter. Where the problem lies is when folks are using it as a substitute for knowledge, and so they are actually just create asking AI to create something. Hey, AI, do my homework for me, or whatever it might be. And I don't know, I haven't read the book, so I don't know anything about it. I don't know if I can't fact check it because I don't know what's true or what's not. And Pondicio argues that that's a real downfall, and I tend to agree. I would add too that I think, like anything, and you mentioned calculators a moment ago, I think we have to be really disciplined to not become intellectually lazy around this stuff. I'll share this quick story. I was at my house, this is months ago, but I heard my daughter has an Amazon Echo, so it's not artificial intelligence, but it's an Amazon Echo, and she says, "Echo, what's 19 plus 6 or something that my daughter, who's in all accelerated classes, could do like that." But instead, it was like easier for Echo to do it, and so I had to have a talk with her. First of all, she was dishonest, said she didn't do it. I heard her do it. I said, "You're not in trouble." You say, "You're not in trouble." I go, "But hey, like you need to push yourself to do that, to calculate that on your own. We can't rely on this technology to solve very simple problems that you can actually solve on your own." And so I think that there's a level of discipline and intellectual discipline that needs to come along with this, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I guess my thought, when I think about this, I was at a conference a while back in the UK, and the gentleman speaking was talking about this idea of light bulb technologies and how kind of just that idea of like, every time there's a different revolution. And he talked, for example, about, 20 years ago, if you had a hip replacement surgery, it would take 12 hours, 8 hours. Like they'd have to do all, and the recovery time was months. And now you can get a hip surgery, hip replacement in 1 hour, 2 hours, and you walk out of the hospital. And so the argument here, of course, and the thought is like, if AI is this new light bulb technology, right? That this thing that's now going to take and make our lives easier and better. Like, well, then what things do we care about? We just talked about state testing and all this other stuff. If now all the information that I need is right here on my phone, why do I need to take a social studies regent? Or why do I need to know how to solve the quadratic formula? I'm not, especially if I'm not going to be a NASA, scientist, I probably am not going to be using the quadratic formula. So then what things as a society will we need to like prioritize? And so, that idea of like judgment and being good people and like, is that the thing that's more important? Like, we still need people to be able to solve and understand the underground of like complex mathematics. But I mean, what do we do? Issue driver's license for AI? Like you have to get a license to use it. I mean, I'm no serious. Like we're going to get to a place where, if you have I mean, your daughter is a great example. Over time, it's going to be so integrated. How can we maintain and regulate to make sure, one, that people are one like really good people, really good humans, right? That's what, when I'm running a school, I want to make sure that I'm making people that are kind and care about society and do all of those things. And I also want them to be able to do mathematics and read a book and do all of those things. But as a society, this new light bulb technology, I mean, it would possibly change what we value, what's important, and what's not. And I think over time, we're going to find out that all of the things that we valued before, are not going to be as important.
Yeah, it's a great point, and it makes me, it just makes me think about a time in the, and I believe in the not too distant future where, you'll go to the doctor and the doctor will inject, little kind of micro particles into your body, into your bloodstream, and those things will fly around, and they'll find if there's, dis-ease, they'll find, that if there's a tumor or cancer cells. And that's a really interesting place to get to. And from what I understand, that's not too far away. The counter to that is that, they play these war games with artificial intelligence, and there's something like 200% more likely to choose the nuclear option because I don't know if they understand the consequences, though I imagine they do. But so that's a really scary thought. I mean, this is like, Skynet from Terminator 2, all over again. I don't know if you saw this. I saw, and I think it was staged. I think it was an experiment, but essentially a person in an office, maybe this was a real story, but I'm pretty sure that it was an experiment, but they had sent quite a few emails to another employee, like I love you, I miss you, and the person's married, right? So it's that they're staging that they're having an affair, and so then they go to try to shut down AI, and they tell their whatever their AI program is, hey, we're going to disconnect you, and the AI program said, I'll tell your wife that you're having an affair. It knows what we're up to. It's been caught lying. Have you heard any of these stories about it being caught lying? to keep itself sustainable. So I just don't know if we've unleashed I don't know if we've unleashed something that, we're not going to be able to contain in a few years. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, yes, it's, I mean, we also iRobot, right? Like even the best work and the, even if we, program AI to, do the best intentions for humans, I mean, given humans, given our history and things that we do, I'm not sure if AI would be willing to protect us from ourselves. But yeah, I mean, there are scary things that happen, and I don't, I mean, I know that we are going to have to eventually get some sort of legislation and regulation, but I don't, how do you stop? You can't stop this now. This is moving full steam ahead. I mean, to your point, I mean, the stories that have happened, I mean, Google had set up, an experiment where they had two AI talking, and then the AI created its own language. And the computer scientists didn't even know what they were saying to each other. So he had to stop it because it's like we're getting like cut out of the conversation.
you
And
think schools are? I think schools are. I could be wrong here. Essentially, AI proof, not in terms of like what instructors will create, because I know that people are already using AI to create lessons and projects, and not what
yeah.
students will do, because I know that students are already using AI to write essays and things like that. But
Yeah.
in terms of a time where teachers and school leaders are replaced by whether it's robots or just like autonomous systems, we're seeing driverless cars, and I don't know. I think they're experimenting with like pilotless planes. Have you heard that? So I don't, but I can't imagine a time when you wouldn't need actual physical humans in a building. What are your thoughts?
Look, I don't put anything past people, technology. I'm sure if someone opened up a fully AI school, they would get enrolled. I think the thing that's missing is, what that article talked about was that judgment. Would I trust a AI co-pilot? Sure. Would I trust the AI pilot with a human co-pilot? Sure. I think, human error is a thing. But that doesn't trump human judgment. And so if there's an emergency, if something happens, I want a human to be able to think and do. Like if I'm having surgery, sure, a robot is going to probably perform it flawlessly by the book. But if something pops up and happens and it's not part of the algorithm, I want a human brain to create that algorithm and fix it. And so schools,
And you're also probably going to want, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but you're probably going to want a human to talk to you in advance, a human at your bedside after the surgery to tell you, no, less so.
I don't need humans for that. No, I'll listen to a avatar. That's fine.
So you're all on board with robot surgeons.
I with a human like sidekick. I think technology like it's like I'm sure people were saying the same thing about getting in a car and driving down the street, 100 years ago, and I'm sure getting into an airplane and all of the things, the big leaps. In our society, like that's what makes humans amazing is this our ability to be industrious and technology and build these things. It's going to take time, but I mean, we've all seen all the futuristic movies and TV shows. But I will say, in schools, it's one of those places where judgment is needed. And I think
Judgment
that
is
there,
being
I think you
deadly.
can replace a lot of human things, but I think you will still always need a human sidekick to add in that variable. And I mean, we see Waymo driving down, but also following the rules, but like not realizing it's driving through a standoff. I'm sure you saw the video where there's like a police standoff, and the Waymo drove right through it.
Really? I didn't see that video.
Yeah, I mean, there was a whole standoff with cops like pointing a gun at someone, and that Waymo just kind of like moseyed on through it, right? A human would have that judgment to be like, okay, I'm gonna stop. Yeah. I'm gonna back up. And so we need that additional sort of just human like consciousness and judgment that we will never be able to replicate in AI. At least, I
agree.
I don't think. I don't know. I mean,
yeah.
We'll see.
Well, yeah, I mean, it probably we don't know what we don't know.
Yeah.
And I'm sure there are people working on this stuff, but I had a friend of mine was like, "Yeah, man, I just think we just get, you know, essentially like AI to teach kids." And I was like, you know, he's like, "We'll just get AI in every classroom and that's the teacher, and you know, we could replace teachers and we can save so much money." And I'm like, "Well, first of all, you've never worked with a teacher's union if you think that, you know, millions of teachers are going to be like, sure, take my job." Like,
right.
So that's not happening anytime soon. But B, I was like, well, what if there's a student who's having a really tough day and they have their head down, or they, you know, they didn't sleep a lot last night, or they had to get little brother or little sister dressed for school. Like, is the AI going to be able to support that student in the way that an educator, a human educator would?
Right.
And I don't, my answer is no, but who knows? You know, they're making, it's like kind of like robots and, you know, people or these machines that apparently can feel emotion, and maybe not my kids, but maybe my kids' kids or their kids. My kids' kids' kids are growing up in a world where, you know, robot police officers and robot, you know, chef at the restaurant, robot waitress. It's kind of crazy to think about, but it's not impossible to think about.
Well, look, I think if the AI were to read our book, they might have a good chance of leading a school. I think if they read our book and execute those 21 strategies, I am certain they'd be able to run any school.
Well, it's a great segue. Folks, we have a new book coming out, Unshakable Leadership, 21 Strategies for, what's the word I can't think of? 21 Strategies.
For success. I had to bring out I don't have an actual book. I have the
21 Strategies for Success in Urban Schools and Beyond.
Yeah. There you go. Nailed
for
it.
For success, yeah, which is funny because we went over that title 400 times. And I just totally blanked on it. Folks, check out the book. It really is the kind of the most straightforward, you know, direct, instructive education book. I know we read it, we wrote it, so I'm biased, but I've never seen another text like this. It's 21 strategies where we include what the strategy is, why it matters, what it looks like to plan to roll it out to your staff, what it looks like to actually roll it out to your staff, what it looks like to execute it at a high level, what the pitfalls could be. We include a special education consideration for every single one of the 21 strategies in the book. So it's called Unshakable Leadership, Michael Sombert, M. Antonio Vance. Check it out. Buy it on Amazon because we're trying to send everyone to Amazon. So we can hopefully go number one. And with that, we're done with our first episode of
that was great.
Season 3. Nice and short and sweet. I heard a funny line the other day. Someone said, James Bond is a secret agent whose catchphrase is telling people his name. He says he's a secret agent. He's supposed to be undercover. And his catchphrase is Bond, James Bond. He tells people who he is. And I thought that gave me a chuckle. So hopefully it gave some people at home a chuckle. And we'll see you all next time. We're going to do quite a few of these, so stay with us. See you all.
You've been listening to Informal Observations 3, The Floor. We'll catch you in the next episode.